From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made yesterday in every Starbucks in the country. Get ready for this. The pumpkin spice latte is back. Who cares that it's 92 degrees today, hot enough to smoke a rack of ribs on the sidewalk? It's never too early to force Americans into the next consumer cycle. So today it's pumpkin spice lattes. Next week it's Christmas shopping. The week after that, Valentine's Day. And by late October, we will be celebrating Christmas 2019 a whole year early. But it turns out that small businesses also celebrate seasonal trends. And yet journalists, like me, tend to focus on the big brands. I have no doubt been guilty of it. Kim Bellware, a freelance reporter who contributes to the New York Times and Rolling Stone, tweeted, quote, "I'm going to grump about stories like this for as long as news outlets give huge companies like Starbucks free advertising under the guise of trend reporting," end quote. And journalist Sarah Smarsh replied, quote, "It absolutely enrages me. Our local business reporting is pretty much a press release megaphone. My journalism professors give this an F," end quote. All of which gives us several layers to discuss here. Do journalists, intentionally or not, hurt small business in favor of big business with stories like this? Is there a place for so-called trend reporting? Is it part of keeping newspapers and journalism newsrooms alive during hard times? And pumpkin spice lattes, we got to talk about that. Are they any good? I admit I used to hate on them, but I've come to see them as entirely logical. There are plenty of drinks I enjoy only during summer or only during winter. I eat squash in the fall when it's harvested. I enjoy asparagus for a few weeks every spring. It makes sense to see a drink with brown spices in the fall. On top of all of this, some listeners tell me that the backlash against pumpkin spice lattes heretofore now be called PSLs. Well, if you hate them, that's a gendered attack, I've been told. So, look, we've got a lot to talk about here. Andrea Hickerson is director of the School of Communication at RIT. Welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Pumpkin spice latte fan, yes or no?
Occasionally.
Occasionally. But you're not like a fanatic.
No. But every now and then, hits the spot.
Andrea Holland is in studio, communication coach, small business owner herself, and a fan of pumpkin spice lattes, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah?
I turn into a basic girl when it comes to PSL.
Don't you need like a little bit of a bite in the air, not like a 92 degree day though?
Oh yeah, no. If you PSL too soon, it's disastrous.
Well, it's nice to have you back here. Wade Reed is co-founder of Fifth Frame Brewing, which is on St. Paul Street in Rochester. How long has Fifth Frame been open now, Wade?
Just under a year.
Just under a year.
Yeah.
And a small business like yourself, you not only do not scoff at the pumpkin spice, the PSL, the pumpkin spice latte, you do one.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
I thought Starbucks was the only one who was allowed to do this.
if they are, nobody told me. We actually have a really great story of where our PSL came from. Before we even opened, a friend of ours who did fitness competitions came to us, and it was around this time of year. And she said, I love pumpkin spice lattes, but there's no sugar-free pumpkin spice. So we actually took pumpkins, we roasted them, we carved them up, we made a homemade pie filling, no sugar added. And that's where our PSL came from. The day we opened, we were serving it, served it all through Christmas, I think.
Wow. All right. So, all right. You guys are going to be on board. When do you bring them back, by the way?
I don't have a specific timeline. I have a couple other drinks I'm looking to debut next week, so it might not be till... It's 90 degrees.
Yeah, man. I am with you there. All right. So let's start with the journalism aspect of this. Andrea Hickerson, director of the School of Communication at RIT and someone who's helping shape minds of young journalists. You know, this is something we would put under the frame of trend reporting. So let's start with just trend reporting in general. Good journalism, fair journalism? Is it what the public wants to know about? How do you view it?
Yeah, I believe it is totally fair and a typical news value to look at trends. It's, you know, general trend reporting can highlight a commonality in a community and highlight things that we don't often realize that multiple people are doing at once. So I think there's a huge value into trend reporting, and it's something that I encourage my students to look at and consider for a feature story.
And I will say, having been in various newsrooms, you're never going to get away from trend reporting, and we do it sometimes on this program. I'm sure I've been guilty of some of what I will criticize. I mean, no one is pure and perfect. But I do take a point. Let me read a tweet from Chris, who writes to us and says, "Cheesecake Factory got free press for introducing two new flavors on National Cheesecake Day." That's pretty ridiculous. Well, I just want to make this something clear. There's no such thing as National Cheesecake Day. There's no such thing as Asparagus Week or Chardonnay Awareness Month or whatever. Those are not real things here. This whole Awareness Day and you know, National Poultry Week, blah, blah, blah. Those are not real things. And what I don't know, Andrea, is why journalists do fall for that, because I think they're looking for some sort of a news peg, and somewhere some smart PR person thought, well, morning news, they will definitely fall for this.
And they do. And it's easy journalism, right? And people read it and they share it. And now there's 100 tweets talking about how people are hating on pumpkin spice lattes at Starbucks. So it's hard to talk about it with also being implicated in the problem that this is getting shared around.
Well, and if we could, let's listen to some of what the Fox affiliate in Chicago had to say yesterday morning. What were they talking about? Well, A trend press release. Let's listen.
All right, so as we brace ourselves for a summer heat wave this week, Starbucks, they have fall on the brain. Yep, they're welcoming back the famous pumpkin spice lattes today. It's the earliest the drink has ever officially hit stores, the PSL, as some Starbucks fans call it. Normally debuts in September. I would have thought even October, but okay. Some customers getting early access, but Starbucks is not the only place getting an early jump on pumpkin season. Dunkin' Donuts, Cracker Barrel, 7-Eleven, they all debuted pumpkin treats earlier this month, too.
Yeah, I was surprised. It's always been the first week in September.
Really?
For the official release.
Yeah, the guy had, well, actually her, but at the same time, he probably should, because a year ago, she did the same story. I don't know why. I didn't know that. Who does this? And I love that the other way, I love the fact that they're pointing out, it's not just Starbucks who does pumpkin spice lattes. It's Dunkin' Donuts, Cracker Barrel, and 7-Eleven.
I want to try the Cracker Barrel pumpkin treat. What is this treat that she alluded to?
Oh, my gosh. And you know, Andrea, there's now like... there's pumpkin spice Oreos. Pumpkin spice rye bread. I mean, like, there's just everything.
No, there's a little too much pumpkin spice for life, you know, just everywhere. But to your point, you know, it is something that we enjoy. And who doesn't love a pumpkin spice latte?
Okay. All right. So I don't mind talking about it. What I do mind is the fact that if we're going to talk about trends, we do tend to default, and again, I will say I'm not holier than thou as a journalist, to big brands. And when that happens, we have to look around at the trends already. There are big advantages for big corporate America already in the form of tax breaks that small companies and small businesses, mom and pops, do not get. I'm not saying that a Fifth Frame Brewing, which, by the way, is, do you call it a coffee shop? What do you call it?
You can call it whatever you want. We call ourselves a brewery, but I hear people call it a coffee shop. I hear people call it a breakfast spot, a diner. It kind of fits your life.
You sell beer?
So we brew beer. We roast coffee. We do have an all-day kitchen, open every day but Mondays. Breakfast sandwiches, donuts, biscuits, but also burgers. Got a couple salads on the menu now because of the summer. Seasonal salads. Does that fall in the PSL vein?
Yeah, no, kind of. So when we talk about a Fifth Frame Brewing in Rochester, it's a small business. I don't know all of the details that came together for the creation of that. And I'm not saying that small businesses don't get occasional help in the form of taxes or whatever the case may be. But certainly big corporate America can leverage it in ways that small businesses can't. And so when journalists talk about Starbucks is back with the PSL, and they don't mention a Fifth Frame or any of your friends around town doing this, I think that hurts. And Andrea, you're someone who helps communicate. You help small businesses. You are a small business. Is it frustrating to see the media sort of default to the big stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it is obviously the obviousness of it all. It's like, oh, you know, we go with Starbucks. That's the obvious answer. But it's also implies, I think, in some ways, a lack of creativity on both parts. So from small businesses, you know, oftentimes there's and Wade, you might have this experience. It's the, you know, why is it always Starbucks? Why are they always representing the big brands? Well, part of it is it's on the small business to increase their visibility in front of media. And you know this, Evan. You know, media will report on what information is readily available. And they'll dig only so far as it's incredibly relevant. But if Starbucks is known for PSL, then they're going to get the play for it. So I think there needs to be creativity on both sides of the field where, you know, reporters can branch out and maybe consider what is the localization of such a national story, for example. But also on the part of the small business owner to say, hey, we're here, we're doing this, and we're going to make it known and clear.
And probably also to say yes when they get called. Does it drive you nuts when you've got clients who say, well, you know, I turned down this cover?
Oh, It really, I mean, it makes me want to cry tears of just frustration, because I have had clients who said, well, a reporter called us 2 weeks ago and we never called him back. Oh, my God. What are you thinking?
Because you know who that reporter's going to call next? They're going to call Starbucks.
Exactly. Or your biggest competitor locally. Yeah. And then they get frustrated and say, well, why didn't they call me? Well, they sort of did. And you just didn't, you know, follow up on it. So there are rules of the game, so to speak, when it comes to media. You have to be on the ball. You have to be quick, and you have to be willing and ready to be the subject matter expert in anything that you do.
And willing to say yes. So Wade is here, and we've had conversations with Wade before. Fifth Frame is I think pretty well repped. But how do you feel about the conversation on, you know, do journalists default to big brands, big corporations? Does that hurt small companies?
I absolutely see more coverage of big brands. I think that's true. I don't entirely, like Andrea was saying, I don't entirely put that on journalists, though. I think there are just a bevy of small tools available to small business owners that we need to learn to use effectively. We need to learn to tell our stories with more, you know, commitment, authenticity, passion. You start a business for a reason. Like, always fall back on that. Always bring that out in what you're doing and how you're telling your story. But also, something that's been huge for Fifth Frame is seeing yourself within the fabric of a small business community and reaching out for collaborations and partnerships where cross-promotion is going to bring a whole new audience in for you. For us, it's been Wall Therapy Fundraiser. Was huge for us. Just brought a bunch of people into the fold who didn't know us before that. We just did an event with Rock EV, the electric vehicles accelerator, and GreenSpark Energy, the solar energy company. And they offered people electric vehicle test drives and free solar analysis, and we offered them, you know, a free pour, you know, for that, free pour of beer. So it's not free to the sponsors, but
sure.
So all that to say, like, you've got to take a smaller view in the sense of, like, you're not grabbing the headlines, but you've got a potentially huge audience on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Snapchat, and you need to be much more proactive with them, and you need to build that core audience if you don't have it. And a broader view, because you need to be able to reach out to other businesses and really amplify one another's impact. Other huge partners for us have been Kat Bucha and Happy Gut Sanctuary. Just the kombucha thing this summer was huge, and just kind of saw the wave coming and made two great partnerships with two great new companies, and the cross promotion and people coming in to get their product from me has just been huge for us. So, like I said, smaller and bigger vision of like who you are, what you're doing, how to tell your story.
Sure, and how to link arms. Andrea Holland, that sounds like small businesses seeing that it's hard enough alone out there.
It is. And I think the more partnerships, advocates, and, you know, spokespeople you can have, so to speak, for your business, the better off you are. And I think, Wade, you pointed out something really important, which is the story. I think one thing that small businesses tend to overlook is the fact that you have a story, a compelling story for why you started your business, why you offer your service, why you create the product that you create. Leverage that to connect on a human level. So you may not be the, you know, breaking news on PSL September 1st, woo. But, you know, Wade, to your point about your story, you know, you created the PSL at your business because somebody wanted a healthier version. So how do you leverage that story, not only with partners, but also in media, in social media, in other ways, because stories are compelling. And I think that's even more compelling than just, oh, PSL is back. What is it for you in your community? What is the story that compels people to maybe look at it from a different angle?
And let me peel back kind of the curtain a little bit and let people in on the kind of process of journalism for a show like Connections, because we will have listeners who will complain, say, well, why are you doing this show? How come you did this conversation? How come you had this person on? How come you didn't have this person on? And it's complicated, and we could sit here all day and talk about parameters of why we book and what we're trying to do here. But ultimately, we are trying to do a number of things. In any given year, we do 500 plus hours. And in a week, you know, 10 hours of conversation, individual hours. We want to be a reflection of a wide range of things. Yes, we want to talk to newsmakers. We want to break news. We are doing our own journalism. We want to talk about hot issues of the week. We do want to talk about trends. It's why we've had a Summer of Food conversation that concludes tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the program. So we do some trends and identification of what's going on that is popular or hot, but we try to get sort of in depth on that. And sometimes we're just telling interesting stories. Sometimes, as Andrea Holland just said, a story is so compelling that we want to hear it. Now, we get hundreds of pitches a week, and often they sound like this. Boy, we would love to get some publicity for our business, our company, our event, our organization, our cause, you know, as if connections exist just so, oh, good, here's the microphone. I'm going to be back at one. Tell me how it went. You know, because Megan Mack and I are thinking about the audience and what listeners care about. And sometimes I fail. I have no doubt. And someone will call me today and say, you're failing right now, Evan. And that's fine. We take that. But when we talk trend stories, it's because we think people care, but we try to be equitable. Mm-hmm. We try to not just hit the obvious or the easy or the big brands. And sometimes, again, we fail. Sometimes we can do better. That's why when we call someone like Wade Reed, you know, you probably say, wow, we're going to say yes, we're going to do this. Because, you know, if that door is open, you have a chance to tell your story. You know, in a way that is, I don't care that it comes off some as free advertising if people care about it. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Exactly. And I mean, I do want to be part of the conversation about PSL because I think ours is really good. I think anyone who tries it is going to enjoy it.
Now, come on, though, but, man. How many products do you have? You go, you know, we make this. I don't really like it. I don't think it's very good. But we'll make it for you.
Yeah, none. No, they're all awesome. I mean, we're just really good at what we do. Thanks for the opportunity to tell everyone.
No, it's fair. It's fair. I take the point. So as we go throughout this hour, listeners, we're going to talk more about what journalism is and is not, what it's doing, sort of the price of modern journalism. If you don't like these trend stories, if you don't like what you think is clickbait, is that part of the deal because the business models are tough? Do you put up with that? Do you like some of it? We'll talk about that as well. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I saw people complaining on social media that in the Democrat and Chronicle, their feed, the top story was a snake on a shopping cart, and the second story was the Rochester Police Department talking about two officers who engaged in misconduct. And they said, well, how is this snake higher up in my newsfeed? Well, I don't know all the metrics, and I have nothing but love and respect for our colleagues at the Democrat and Chronicle. It's probably metrics and clicks. And Andrea, that's sort of the world we're moving into with journalism.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of organizations are doing A-B testing now where they'll tweet two different headlines and see which one gets more clicks. And I can tell you that the snake story showed up in my social media feed multiple times yesterday. So people are reading that. I think that a lot of the critiques that people have about trend stories or the snake stories is really just a way for them to, with their frustration with local journalism in general. And they think they interpret this as another sign that it's going down the tubes, when I think that there's a lot of false nostalgia about the way that it used to be. I think that there's always been this kind of boosterism of big businesses and local businesses that both we need to investigate further. So that's how my interpretation of some of the criticism of this type of reporting is that it really is speaking to other people's feelings about the media business in general.
That's interesting, though. You think some of that, well, back when I was growing up, it never was. Some of that nostalgia is sort of a false frame of thinking. You think it's not accurate necessarily to think the grass was always greener?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of journalism historians that have written about this and done content analyses of things before. And you think about it, there were more ads in papers before. And if we want to go back to the 1880s and talk about the penny press, I mean, they had patent medicines that weren't even true. And, you know, they were selling the ads there. So we have a history of hawking products in the news. So to act like it wasn't or that we weren't doing that before, I think it is unusual. And then, you know, something that was really important to me, an important experience I had, is when I was an intern at a small paper called the Daily Local News in Westchester, Pennsylvania. My features editor gave me a story to write, and it was about a construction company that was putting in new houses. And so I worked on it, you know, very hard, apply myself to this story. And it got published. And then the editor came to me. He said, oh, Andrea, you didn't have to work so hard on that story. We were doing that as a favor. And I was crushed.
As a favor?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I was crushed. I mean, I'm glad I didn't know that. But I don't know if he thought that I was savvier than that and didn't take it so seriously. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, 15, 20 years ago. But, yeah, I mean, so I'm just not sold on this idea that things are so much worse now or that they were so much better before.
What would you have said had you known it was a quote-unquote favor story?
I mean, I would have asked more questions about it. I mean, I was 19. I was still learning from people. So I don't know. You know, you're pretty powerless in that position when the whole point is that it's experiential learning to do this type of assignment. But I would have asked more about it. And I think, you know, I think I was still really self-righteous at 19 and probably would have said why, you know, and was trained at a really good journalism school where I knew that that wasn't okay. And I still have that feeling like it was a very formative experience for me.
Yeah, I look now at, sometimes it's called advertorials or content that is paid advertising that will show up either in a newspaper or on an internet website. I saw a lot of it at least, I feel like 5-10 years ago on Slate. I don't know if it's on there as much anymore. I think probably it is. That looks, it's almost disguised like a newspaper piece. And it's often hard to tell. That I am way less comfortable with. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
I am too. I mean, I see that there is a place for sponsored content, but then you have to really look at the labeling and see if it's really obvious. Because I've definitely been reading magazines and there's an ad for like a Caribbean vacation and it feels like weird in the context of this magazine because the font hasn't even changed. I understand that that's a way to make money. I understand that companies pay for that type of thing. And I think that we have to acknowledge the realities of the industry. But we really have to put our consumers first or the audiences first and make sure that they're aware of what's going on. You know, what came off a press release, what is entrepreneurial reporting? We have to tell people.
Tracy Schumacher, who is a writer for the Democrat and Chronicle, and a good one, by the way, and a friend of this program, and someone I read all the time. She writes the following on Twitter. She says, I've been asked whether businesses pay for my Democrat and Chronicle food and drink coverage countless times. The answer is always no. But what I think is odd is people who don't subscribe or advertise suddenly being so interested in our profitability. Why are they so concerned with our giving away, quote, free advertising? Reporters are measured in part by the number of people reading their content. I am sure that story was written because people will read it. She's talking about the Starbucks story out of Chicago. She said, I have no plans to write about Starbucks lattes, but I'm sure it was written because people will read it. And there is, at least in part, a measurement of reporters based on content. And they do measure this. They can tell you how many times people click on your stories. And they can tell you how many times people sort of follow up and how long they're spending on this. So that's real. That doesn't mean, if we have Wade from Fifth Frame on, that this is a form of advertising. It doesn't mean that this is hardcore investigative journalism. And does it benefit Fifth Frame? I think anybody who comes on the program, generally speaking, unless they're really stepping in it, can benefit. But my job as the host of this program is not to get mired down in salesmanship. It's to have conversations that people care about. And if it makes people interested in your product or your business or your organization or your cause, so be it. We are talking about the pulse of the community. But let's talk about what Tracy said. So, Andrea, mm-hmm. Tracy Schumacher is saying, you know, number one, no, we're not selling news stories. Nobody can call Tracy Schumacher and say, hey, I'd love for you to review my restaurant. How much is that going to cost? That doesn't happen. But people, the fact that people think that's a pretty cynical thing.
It is.
And it's not good for journalism that people might think that.
No, and I think, you know, that's a part of the larger industry trend now is that a lot of people have assumptions about journalism and the way that it works. And traditionally, journalists haven't wanted to engage with their audiences about how they get their stories and how that is made and kind of have this voice that's kind of distant, which is fine. But then I think it's just related to a lot of, you know, misinformation about how these stories are made that, no, they're not paid, you know, that they don't, that they go there in secret sometimes if it's a food review or anything like that. So I agree with what she's saying completely, and I'm incredibly sympathetic to that. And the point, too, that how many of these people are actually paying for the newspaper as well. So they're quick to criticize local, you know, local businesses not being patronized, but how many of them are actually paying for the Democrat and Chronicle?
Yeah, Mike on Twitter says, ultimately, I know it's just another advantage for corporate America, stories like Starbucks and their lattes that come out every fall. Warren Buffett just gave up on trying to make a go of it with his own hometown newspaper. It's rough out there, and it's hard for me to begrudge people just trying to survive. So he's talking about, as a young journalist, Mike is writing from another state, he's saying, look, I want to be a journalistic purist like anybody, but if this is what keeps you in business, do we have to do it? So where do we draw the line, Andrea? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think, like, these are easy stories we're talking about, right? Like, there's a news peg, look, you know, these are in stores September 1st type of thing.
Yep.
But I think the important thing is this coverage has to be proportional to the community as well. So I think you know, the journalists, if they have the time, they need to go figure out what local people are doing it. Like, that is a great angle on that story. Use the Starbucks hook and then say, oh, not into that. Try these local PSLs instead. But I think, you know, the same questions we need to ask about big business, we also need to ask about our local businesses too. So I do think there is a little bit of a double standard and a fine line between promoting businesses and then asking questions that are good for the community in large.
And now I've got a pile of emails on a ton of different topics here, including whether the hatred that some people have for PSL. I have a separate email telling me do not call it PSLs anymore. So Wade and I are going to address that when we come back here.
Hashtag PSL.
I love that. Hashtag PSL. We're going to talk about this, but I have some people saying that the hatred of it is actually a gendered attack, that this is attack on things that women like and that what men like doesn't get the same scrutiny. So we're going to talk about that. We'll take more of your comments on the PSL, the hashtag PSL. Sorry, everybody. We're going to do that. we're going to talk about small versus big businesses. I got a couple of emails on that. And we'll continue to have the conversation about journalism, too, about our responsibility to make sure that our audience understands what's going on and not just what the big corporations are doing. Really interesting insight this hour from Andrea Hickerson, director of the School of Communication at RIT, Andrea Holland, a communication coach and a small business owner herself, and Wade Reed, co-founder of Fifth Frame Brewing. Call it a coffee house, call it a brew house, whatever you want. It's on St. Paul Street.
It's your life.
It's in Rochester. Your phone calls and emails next. Coming up in our second hour, so often when we talk about climate change, we talk about it in terms like this. We say it's a problem for our children or grandchildren to deal with, that the problem is many years into the future. That's not the case. There are impacts already, and an upcoming event in Rochester called Rise Up for a Resilient Rochester takes a look at the work being done on a wide range of fronts. We preview the event next hour. Welcome back to Hashtag PSL Conversation here on Connections. Jim writes to us and says, let's stop calling it PSL. It only adds to its undeserved status as a cultural phenomenon.
Undeserved, it's been around 16 years.
Hold on. He says any beverage that has multiple Twitter accounts is out of control. No wonder it gets free advertising from countless news media outlets. He does put a smiley face at the end. Now, Jim, I'm listening. So the pumpkin spice latte, he thinks calling it PSL just takes it to like this weird ethereal plane that's just not deserved, Wade.
I wholeheartedly disagree. I mean, it's been around since I was in high school. So it is a phenomenon, and it is one that, listen, someone made coffee taste like pumpkin pie. I'm for that. Like, that's fantastic.
Well, since we're on the subject, Mark emails the program, wants to know what is in a pumpkin spice latte, and he says, surely not pumpkin.
It depends on where you get it. But if you're getting one from Fifth Frame, you're getting actual pumpkin pie filling made from actual pumpkins roasted in our kitchen and mixed up by our chef, Jared Foster. So yeah, that's actual pumpkin. If you're getting it other places, you're likely to get a syrup made in a lab out of I don't know what.
Sounds delicious.
And I'm not, it's still good. It's still really good.
Do you really think it's really good?
Yeah, I really do. And I drink them every year from anywhere I can get them.
Okay,
yeah.
So you are...
I really am a fan.
You are a PSL fan. Well, here is a comment from a listener who says, the pumpkin spice latte debate is just another way for society to dictate what women are and aren't allowed to like and enjoy. This is flavored coffee. Who gives a darn? Andrea Holland, is it? Do you detect a gendered attack in the hatred of PSL?
I'm going to politely say that I disagree with that. I don't, and maybe this is just my inability to see it, I don't see how PSL is how PSL is gender specific, specifically female based. I mean, we have two men in the room. You guys like PSL.
Yeah, I've come around.
Right. Okay.
I've come around.
So how, I guess I'm having a hard time understanding the argument for it being a female-driven product.
Yeah. Do you have any idea in your shop at Fifth Frame how it breaks down in sales?
I don't sense a major gendered difference. Now, when we introduced it, we were very new, and we weren't doing the kind of sales we're doing now, so we'll see this season if we see some kind of major shift.
Okay.
I wholeheartedly disagree with this. I, for whatever reason, and okay, so white male obviously here speaking, like unqualified white male speaking. For whatever reason, though, the PSL has been far more memeified and vilified than any other Starbucks drink. Like, name another Starbucks drink that goes through this.
that poor PSL.
That people like will seriously, will attach to all kinds of things they dislike.
And I think that started happening when pumpkin spice flavors started traveling to other parts of the supermarket outside of coffee, and people started saying, you know, come on here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of PSL
spice
product.
Pumpkin spice oatmeal.
Yeah. But it's good, though. Have you tried it?
It is good.
Pumpkin spice pancetta. It's getting weird. Yeah. it's just getting weird.
Where did you find that?
Yeah. Wade actually wants all PSL stuff. Do you detect any gendered attack on the hatred on PSL?
It had not occurred to me. I mean, I think it's smart. I like engaging with these types of critiques because I think that the critique that women are often vilified or something like in through products and their choices. I get that, but I had not thought of pumpkin spice latte as being gendered.
Because the same listener continues, Andrea Holland, she says, I hope you'll be touching on the inherent misogyny in society hating on things primarily young women enjoy, not just PSLs, but Twilight, Taylor Swift, Uggs, etc.
Those are all great things. I would argue, and you know,
I think Taylor Swift has done okay. But anyway,
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not like a huge T-Swift fan, but I'm just saying it's not. You know, I don't look at it as a criticism of those things. And I would contend possibly that the same could be said for products that are for men. You know, there's a lot of poking fun at beers being a male-driven thing. You know, it's a male product. And, the, you know, the beer gut is the, you know, typified male side effect of having too many beers. So I don't know that I would agree with it, but I'm open to the argument.
Well, here's a tweet from Chelsea that I actually got a good laugh at this. Chelsea writes, pumpkin spice lattes are dumb, say men who line up for can releases of yet another hazy, juicy New England-style IPA with notes of pineapple and mango.
I think
it's funny.
True.
That's funny.
Well, I think some of it too is this the idea that something is pretentious, right? And we highbrow, lowbrow culture, and we're making a judgment on that. You know, that if you're persnickety, that's somehow bad. And I think that might be some of the critique of pumpkin spice lattes or these high end beers thing.
I mean, they're both delicious, I will say. I would like that IPA.
Yeah. I do have some people saying, can't we like
I know
both?
Where you might be able to find one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And actually, you might be able to get a hashtag PSL and a beer.
That exact beer that you just described, actually, probably.
Yep.
One-stop shop.
Justin Murphy, our colleague at the Democrat and Chronicle, and again, I try to be transparent with listeners about a lot of things, and we joke about some things, we have some fun, we're doing some of that this hour, but some of this is very serious stuff, and I am very transparent about my devotion to print news and its value, so whenever I can throw the spotlight on what they're doing, I think it's important. I do not want to see a world without local print. And Justin just writes to us and says, Evan, regarding Andrea Hickerson's point regarding past journalism not being perfect, exactly 100 years ago today, the Democrat and Chronicle ran a story at the direction of local Army manufacturing unit saying they were in need of stenographers. The headline, war stenographers are needed here in ordnance office, good pay given. So a direction from the Army, run the story. They did. It was 100 years ago today.
Perfect. Thanks, Justin.
We appreciate that. Justin, let me get Bonnie on the phone. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, I know you're talking about beverages and various forms, but I wanted to take the opportunity since some of the discussion was about small businesses.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of us, you know, like small businesses, you know, with valid reasons, of course. One of the things I wanted to point out, though, because one of your guests was talking about kind of connecting with the community and that whole kind of larger concept. Well, I don't know if you're aware, and this is actually a subject for XXI to, I think, pursue, too. The issue of worker-owned co-ops, which has become a little bit more prevalent in this country, you know, started in Europe many years ago. Something has happened recently. The city, you know, kind of followed up a little bit, and there's started one about a year ago, small. And that the person who ran that left the city and has started something called You Own, which is a not-for-profit that is designed especially to work with people to help them become worker-owned co-op owners, you know, co-owners. So it would be great if that was, you know, continued, that was part of these discussions, so that people know something about them. And then, you know, as I said, XXI would be great to have an update on that, because this is a fairly new offshoot of doing that. So, and the other thing is, these models are very community oriented. So the more all these businesses connect as a value of being connected with the community, it has a lot of benefits. So, for instance, one of the benefits is, a lot of times you'll see, you know, when there's a new restaurant or something opening from a place that already, you know, left, you'll see a repeating of the same thing over and over again. The poster shop on Monroe Avenue, which I really like, he's retiring, and I talked to him a little bit about this option, and he didn't know anything about it. It may be too late, so they're going to, when he leaves in a couple of weeks, they're going to put another pizza place there. And that is one of the real frustrations of people like myself and others, is that that there's not a lot of, so if small business people value each other and value these concepts, I would like to see them kind of take a stronger view. I know it gets a little complicated, and connect with the city, and all of us act as monitors for, you know, something better than, you know, we had before.
Yeah, Bonnie, thank you for this. And I think it's perfectly relevant to the conversation today, because Bonnie's point, I think, is an interesting one. When we think about co-ops as a possible option, and we think about what people do or don't know, she's referencing a shop that is closing that she likes. And, you know, you talk to the management, they said, boy, I had no idea this model existed. Well, the media probably doesn't cover it much. So Andrea Hickerson, we report on what we know. It's one of the reasons that all white newsrooms can struggle to fully understand issues that impact people of color. It's one of the reasons that mostly male staffs may miss some things, so you can claim you're an ally, but if you don't have the perspective. So we report on what we know generally, and it takes an effort to get outside of your comfort zone. And what I knew growing up was I didn't know anything about co-ops. So journalists have a lot to learn on a lot of different subjects, and this is probably just one of them.
Yeah, and I would add, too, you know, I think a lot of people go into journalism historically, at least, thinking they don't have to know anything about business and they just want to write. And I think that that's a real handicap, because part of their business is covering other businesses, so they can't isolate themselves in a way that maybe they thought they could.
Yeah, Andrea, do you, you're somebody who not only has done a lot of work in various forms of media, you have a sibling in journalism here in this town. You know a lot of the journalists and the people who run newsrooms. How much progress do you see being made to get journalists and to get newsrooms to not just sort of broaden perspective to learn, but also to hire and to diversify?
Well, I think, in terms of, are you asking diversify in terms of staff?
I think it's staff, and I think it's also understanding issues, you know, beyond sort of our limited scope.
Well, I think because of the readily available information there is today that maybe journalists didn't have 20 years ago, you know, we have so much access to stories online and content, and we can connect with anyone in the community nowadays. You know, the onus is also on reporters to branch out from what they, you know, normally know. You know, for example, many reporters would cover a beat. That would be the one thing they would focus on, and you were the health reporter, and that was it. And nowadays, you know, you have VJs, you have video journalists whose job is to go out with camera and, you know, get the story, and they have to turn multiple packages in one day. So I think as far as diversifying, you know, there is a new skill set that's required to be a successful reporter or journalist in multiple ways. And I think also because of that, when you look at it from the small business perspective, you know, as Wade pointed out earlier, you really have to be smart about the way you're approaching the opportunity to become visible in front of those who are members of the media, in front of journalists and reporters, and find new ways to become an option that they want to learn more about. Because it isn't just cover the one thing that you know about and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's hugely diverse.
That's a great point. Andrea Hickerson, can I ask you, at RIT, are you seeing diversity in the students who are coming through the communication program?
We do see diversity coming in, and actually, not just at RIT, but at journalism schools in general, we are seeing an increase in enrollment in journalism, which is really encouraging. I don't know how long that will be. I mean, our students are getting jobs right away. I do worry a little bit that's because people that have experience are taking buyouts or leaving the industry early, freeing up jobs for the younger students. So they do have early careers. Ultimately, what they do, I don't really know. But it's hard. I mean, the rhetoric that's going on in the nation right now about news and about journalism, I think in some ways motivates a new type of student to get involved with journalism than before. But that also, it might be hard to tell your parents that you want to major in journalism. And that's kind of can be difficult for some people, too, and maybe some of the diverse voices that we'd like to see in newsrooms.
If you've got a student who says to you, why would I want to be a journalist? Go in there. I'm going to be measured by how many clicks I get. I got to write stories on pumpkin spice lattes. I want to be covering, quote, real stuff. You know, what do you say to people who are feeling that cynicism even before they get into the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I tell them is there is a place for them. Like, the students are getting hired. I mean, you do have to pay your dues, and you will have to write stories about construction sites and pumpkin spice lattes and, you know, what to do with dogs in hot weather. You have to do that type of stuff to kind of get to that position. But once you get your beat, and I think, what you said is so important, that you're right, we don't have beats anymore, and that's mm-hmm. such to the detriment of to the reporters and their ability to access sources in a timely manner, and to the communities that they cover.
One thing I will say is whenever I do work with clients on, you know, media training and things like that, one of the things I always tell them is the most dangerous thing you can have is a reporter who shows up, who doesn't know anything about you, did not read the press release that you so carefully pored over, and who has only 15 minutes to talk to you, if that. And it's interesting because they'll say to me, well, you know, why would that be so dangerous? It's an open slate. I can tell them anything I want. I go, exactly. You can say anything right now. you have to own the story in that case. So a lot of times, you know, reporters will show up with zero information. They were just told to go somewhere and cover this story. You have to craft the message that you want them to hear in some cases. And that's not to knock reporters. It's just indicative of what reporters actually go through in this day and age, with the news cycle being very different than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Hmm. Yeah. And so, Wade, if somebody comes into Fifth Frame, have you thought about that? What you would want them to take away if it's sort of the narrow, short, elevator pitch version of your story?
First of all, I want to make sure Andrew's not going to charge me for that. That last bit of
advice. That was really good, wasn't it?
That was awesome.
That's why Andrew is here, by the way.
I've been at other coffee shops I worked at, not at Fifth Frame, when that's happened. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you want to talk to someone else. I think, yeah, we do have a pretty good elevator pitch. I've given most of it since we've been on the air, right? Like, we fit your life. You know, if you want a place to stop and get a quick cup of coffee, where if you want a good craft brewery that's dedicated to just coming out with all kinds of fun styles and different variations on recognizable styles, where if you want a good breakfast sandwich, if you want a burger, a vegetarian option for your burger, summer salads, that kind of thing, we're it. We've got it. So I do have that elevator pitch kind of in my back pocket. It comes from taking like 3 years to put this whole thing together. But at the same time, if those elements aren't already in your messaging that you carry out like every single day, if something about that isn't finding its way into, like, you can take a great picture, but is it telling your story? Like, mm-hmm. if something about that isn't present in everything you do, you're not reinforcing anything. And like 10 front page New York Times stories about your hashtag PSL, because I got to bring it back, aren't going to help you. You've got to build an audience where you're at, and you do that with very small, very technical means that then you reinforce when a journalist comes and knocks on your door.
And so let me follow up with that and ask you a question that I do think our listeners care about when it comes to what your story is. Do you view your competitors, technically competitors, there seems to be still a sort of rising tide lifting boats in specialty coffee in Rochester. And maybe at some point we get to a saturation point. But do you view the Starbucks of the world as the enemy?
I'm of two minds entirely on this. So you have to take a long view where you say, without Starbucks, there's no coffee shop on every corner culture that people now enjoy and support. You have to look at how many products they pioneered that now these are playgrounds I get to play in. But when a developer in downtown Rochester decides to put a Starbucks in, and I know five guys with the energy, the passion, the knowledge, and the commitment to open a corner coffee shop, make it really good, and it's right down the street from me to begin with, that's frustrating. Yeah. It's like you are building like the future. You know, that's what you're billing yourself, the new downtown, with Starbucks. It's been around 30 years. When you've got fresh, new energy right here in town, And it doesn't have to be a fifth frame. You know, I know a lot of guys who could do something really magical with that space. Guys, men and women, actually. I should be careful with how I say it. Who could do something really magical with a corner space in downtown Rochester. And it's not even being looked at. And maybe part of this is some of the journalism stuff, but I also just think it's a narrowness about what it means to put together a downtown, what it means for us to, you know, be starting afresh down here. And thank goodness the developers we worked with didn't have that narrowness, because we were part of a whole competition. There were so many great ideas in this competition bandied about, and we got to see these public, really performances of people's ideas. And it was so encouraging. And just the thought of being a part of that, and then the thought of being chosen as the one that they supported, was it totally changed everything for us. That was the moment, like I said, 3 years putting this thing together, that was the moment that it was going, and there was no looking back. So
yeah, how interesting. And so, to, as you said, you brought it back to PSL. So let's bring it back to the reason we were here in the first place, having a little fun with all of the media going nuts over Starbucks bringing back their PSLs this week. Would you want media to remember that there are PSLs at places beyond Dunkin' Donuts and 7-Eleven and Cracker Barrel, which I wouldn't even have thought of, Cracker Barrel and Starbucks? What would you want the media to know?
That this is merely a form. The PSL is a form. Starbucks doesn't have the only one. Dunkin' Donuts, Tim Hortons, those are not the only ones. And we get to play with that form too. And at the risk of extending the art metaphor, like, I get to take that and sculpt it, and I get to decide how much of the pumpkin pie filling goes in each drink. I get to decide, you know, the pumpkin pie filling is not sweet enough. We need whatever it is. Find a way to sweeten it, add honey. We don't want people looking at this as Starbucks is doing it and they're the only ones doing it. It's not a monolith. We're still part of that community, that same community that's doing what they're doing. So, and it's not just fifth frame either. So
absolutely. A couple more emails from listeners. Dan writes to us and says, these newsrooms are owned by corporate juggernauts, and small local businesses are not really, quote, on their team in the same way that other megalithic corporations are. It makes sense that they would cater to their peers. That's from Dan. Andrea Hickerson, I think there's some real wisdom there. I'm not going to push back. I think Dan's making an important point. When I would just add this. When he says it makes sense that they would cater to their peers, I don't think the executive producer of the morning show at Fox Chicago thinks of it that way. I don't think it's an overt sort of conscious thought, but I think that there is a culture that just may make that more normalized because of the way corporate-funded journalism sort of is in some places. Thank goodness not where I'm sitting, but I think there's some wisdom in that comment.
I agree, absolutely.
And then he says, to get to a different perspective on this, he's talking about City Newspaper and Open Mic Rochester. He says, conversely, Open Mic Rochester makes the effort to publicize and outreach toward local organizations and entrepreneurs. I don't see Starbucks ads in City Paper, but I do see many local ads and stories. You've had bylines in City Newspaper too. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that point there?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, and it kind of goes back to something I said before about historical trends. So advertising dollars in newspapers really started to decline in the 90s when big department stores started to really struggle with profits, and so they've had to rethink what they're going to do. But I also know in doing some of the research that I've done on immigrant press and local community media that they would love big corporate sponsors to buy an ad because they have more money to spend on it. So it's a different strategy. Something new like Open Mic, they have the freedom to try new things because they were never married to that original business model to begin with.
That is such an interesting and important point, because as you look at the future of journalism, I have so often thought, I am at the place where this is the model that I want. I want the model that says to the community, if you like it, you can keep it. Open Mic created their own model. I think the models of having sales forces doing old traditional advertising in a very changing media world are tough. I mean, it was 15 years ago where there was this hope that online, you know, internet ads are going to kind of be on parity. And since we all love banner ads and pop-ups with forced audio, that's totally come to pass. Mm-hmm. Only it hasn't, and everybody hates that stuff. So it's tough. It's really tough. operating in that existing model and trying to slowly shift it, whereas Open Mic created from scratch, WXXI, and public broadcasting has the model that I think is the healthiest because it's the most transparent and direct with the community about if you like it, you can keep it. And so I just think going forward, do you think we're going to see reinvention of sales model? I guess we're slowly seeing it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's happening. I mean, there's a ton of really interesting new hyperlocal startups throughout the United States or online niche things, and I don't know any of them that are going after big advertising dollars. Like, nobody is using that as a starting point to find something that, you know, there's more interest in nonprofit or in local community supported things. There's some really cool things about, you know, they're event based. So they might sponsor an indoor music festival and get all the revenue from that. So they're looking for different models to begin with. And so I really do feel for the legacy media who are kind of stuck with that model and stuck with jobs. I mean, people work there, so there's real consequences. So it makes it really hard to innovate when you're married to that model.
If you decide you want a pumpkin spice latte, eventually, when it's not 92 degrees and your face isn't slowly melting off in the hot summer sun, there are local coffee houses that offer it. Fifth Frame is one of them. Where are you located?
We're at 155 St. Paul Street,
right?
Just two doors down from Tapas 177.
Which a lot of people would know there. It's a neat little up-and-coming district. I really like what's going on there. It's a lot
of fun. There's a lot of energy and a lot of potential.
And Wade is now an inadvertent client of Andrea Holland. And if you wanted to contact Andrea Holland, who's a communication coach and a small business owner, where do they find you?
AndreaHolland.net.
On AndreaHolland.net.
Yes.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you,
as always. Wade, thank you. And thanks to Andrea Hickerson, Director of the School of Communication at RIT. You guys are back on campus already, yes?
We are. We started this week.
You're so happy to
be back. I know.
You are.
I miss the students.
She has a perma smile. All right. Much more connections coming up.